Welcome to the EmpowerPatientPodcast.com show. I'm Karen Jagoda, and my guest today is Jeff Baxter. He's the president and CEO of VBI Vaccines, VBIVaccines.com, a commercial stage biopharmaceutical company developing a next generation of vaccines to address unmet needs in infectious diseases and immuno-oncology. And the topic today is raising awareness about CMV, cytomegalovirus, the leading cause of birth defects. And I want to welcome you to the show today, Jeff, and really appreciate you taking some time to give us a little education about this.
Great, Karen. Thanks very much. I'm really delighted to be with you today and to talk about this. CMV is absolutely a very, very worthy topic of patient empowerment. Because so little is known about it.
And so what does the general public know? And do they know that CMV is the number one cause of birth defects?
No, absolutely not. It's very interesting, actually. Some data was recently published from the United Kingdom. Only about one in three women between the ages of 18 and 44, prime birth sort of age, are aware of CMV, whereas more common causes of birth defects, such as leptospirosis or Down syndrome or fetal alcohol syndrome, are much better known. So I think if you speak to people of childbearing age, on average, people will always know about the potential danger of eating raw dairy products or being near cat litter or the dangers of drinking and smoking whilst conceiving or, in fact, carrying a child. But as I say, only about a third of childbearing women have ever actually heard of CMV, let alone understand the risks and perhaps how to avoid that risk.
And so who is most likely to be affected by this infection?
Yeah, CMV is a ubiquitous virus. It's very, very common amongst the sort of human population. It doesn't get transmitted from any animals or anything. CMV is very specific to each species of living being. But human CMV is actually transmitted via the urine and feces of young boys. And so the population, as population gets older and gets more exposed to young children, the greater probability there is that they will be exposed to CMV and develop natural immunity. Having said that, CMV doesn't cause any outward or any external symptoms in normal healthy people, but CMV can be deadly to the severely immunocompromised. So I think the role of CMV in the medical world is very well understood, particularly in HIV or people receiving chemotherapy or people whose immune systems are washed out through the transplant of solid organs. But otherwise, people really don't understand the consequences of CMV. Now, of course, the best example of an immunocompromised is a developing fetus. As I think we're all aware, the fetus inherits its immune system and immune defenses from its mother through its development, particularly in the first trimester of pregnancy. Which is why most public health bodies now are really concentrating on healthy mothers and healthy babies.
And so is this infection in the mother early on and it's just kind of lying dormant until she becomes pregnant? Or is it something that could affect her as she ages and then coincidentally gets pregnant? Where does it come into her body?
Yeah, that's a really very important question. So on average, a 28-year-old woman in the US would be 50% protected, i.e. have natural immunity from CMV, and 50% of those 28-year-olds would not have been exposed to natural infection, i.e. they wouldn't have been exposed to young children or parents of young children. So the younger a woman is at the point in time which she conceives, just on the law of averages, the greater probability there is that she will not have been around young children, may not have been exposed to young children, and therefore will be CMV negative, i.e. that young lady would not have been exposed to CMV as a natural consequence of their day-to-day life, and therefore will not have developed natural immunity. So we're seeing a significant increase in the risk to young mothers, because population demographic changes mean that perhaps young women do not help out at home as much with younger siblings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and therefore they do not develop this natural immunity. So the risk is, if a woman who is unprotected, i.e. has not previously been exposed to CMV and hasn't developed natural immunity, something that's called CMV seronegative, then if that woman conceives and in the first trimester of her birth becomes exposed to CMV for the first time, then she will get infected and she will develop natural immunity. But the problem is that she passes that virus across the placenta to developing fetus, and CMV attacks the central nervous system and neurological development. So CMV is an incredibly strong virus in the unprotected, i.e. the immunocompromised, as that fetus would be. And so the terrible consequence of severely impacted CMV births are quite chronic neurological, visual, and hearing disorders.
And is this a syndrome that would mean a very, very short life, or are those things that you just described kind of chronic conditions that children then learn to live with?
Yeah, so there's about 30,000 infections of newborn children every year of CMV. And about 5,000 of those 30,000 will go on to be really chronically defective. And that leads to, as I said, both neurological and physical deformity. And unfortunately, for those 5,000 odd every year, that really means a very, very unfortunate and stressful and traumatic life for their carers. And unfortunately, they usually, you know, do not live beyond their sort of early teens. There's really nothing that can be done for a child that's been born with CMV. Once CMV has caused these developmental issues, obviously and unfortunately, you can't reset the clock in terms of a fetus and a young child's neurological development.
And so there currently is no vaccine for women to prevent the infection, is what I'm told, and that's something that you're working on. So there's some light at the end of the tunnel here?
Yeah, exactly. In fact, Karen, it's very interesting that there's only one country in the world that pre-screens women to see whether or not they're at risk, i.e. if they do not have natural immunity to CMV, and that is Israel. But if a woman is screened and to be shown at risk, doesn't have natural immunity to CMV, there really is very little practical advice that can be given to that woman other than to stay away from young children, parents of young children, daycare settings, hospitals, schools, etc., where they may be at risk of exposure and if they're considering starting a family. So our vaccine has been developed with this in mind, and discussions with the ACIP, the public health body that mandates vaccines, and the NIH and the FDA. And the thought is that our vaccine would be developed such that it could be administered to all adolescent girls. Because, as I mentioned earlier, a younger woman is when she conceives, the higher probability is that she's not protected against CMV, and there is this risk to the developing child. So our vaccine would be given to young ladies, of adolescent age. And then in later in life, in a more planned family setting, if the woman had the vaccine as an adolescent girl, i.e. all three shots, she would be given one booster in a more planned family setting where she's considering conceiving. And if she didn't receive the shots as an adolescent girl, she would be given two shots. And so the idea is, again, is healthy mothers and healthy babies. Everything that you can do to protect a mother's health preconception now is recognized as the best way of giving birth to healthy babies.
And can you say a little bit about how that vaccine works in a woman's body? Can you just give us a little kind of easy to understand way in which it may affect the what's going on inside the woman's body as she is trying to get pregnant or later on when she does get pregnant?
Sure, absolutely. So the principle of our vaccine, it's a technology of vaccine development called virus-like particles. And virus-like particles, they sound scary, and I guess the concept could be scary, but it is a subunit of the vaccine. But what you do is you take some of the proteins out of the virus, and you obviously leave out the harmful proteins. But you contain, in the virus-like particle, you contain those proteins that are specific to CMV. And in this case, it's the glycoprotein B. Now, GB as an antigen, we include it in our virus-like particle. When it's vaccinated into the woman, then the natural immune system recognizes the virus-like particle and responds to it as if it was the actual virus. Now, the novelty of our vaccine is that it doesn't contain any of the harmful parts of the DNA, etc. But the way in which you present it in this virus-like particle, very much as the name suggests, that the vaccine very closely mimics the natural virus, and therefore it stimulates a very strong and a very rapid natural immune response. Now, that natural immune response is in the form of neutralizing antibodies, which are B cells. And so the immune system is absolutely amazing, as we all know, and it has a memory system where essentially it carries on producing and retaining those neutralizing antibodies, such that so once the woman is protected, as the woman conceives, then as with all other neutralizing antibodies, B cells and T cells, those are maternally transferred to the developing fetus through the placenta. And hence, that's why essentially what you do is you stimulate natural immunity in the mother, which then she passes to the fetus, the developing child.
How very interesting. And you're kind of fooling the system, but it's close enough that it does what it's supposed to do. I'm wondering, is there some genetic predisposition? Are some people more likely to be immune naturally, or do some people have a more likelihood of becoming infected? Do you have any sense about that?
No, there's no genetic disposition at all. It's very much just the consequences of, you know, a sort of demographic and sort of population trends and various other consequences. So, for example, you know, it's very interesting because we have a trial underway at the moment where we enrolled 125 CMV zero negative, i.e. those people that didn't have natural immunity. And obviously as part of our trial, we're vaccinating them and stimulating that natural immunity. And I'm delighted to say the interim results were very, very positive that we published a few weeks ago. But what's so interesting is that just between, for example, the two different centers, we were enrolling subjects in Vancouver, and we found that about the break point of natural immunity was about 30, 32 years old. And then we also enrolled people in Halifax, but we found the break point for immunity there was around about 24, 25. And so it is very interesting. So it very much just depends upon sort of demographic and, you know, population trends in different types of cities, cultures, and countries.
And so I have to ask, does it show then that older mothers are less likely to have this virus or to have children born with this defect?
Hold on, Karen. That's exactly right. Because, you know, if you sort of did a straw poll of, I don't know, say 40-year-old men and women, by that age, most people will have got exposed to young children. And as we know, young boys are not always the best at washing their hands, and perhaps parents don't always wash their hands properly when they change diapers, etc. And so as people get exposed to nieces, nephews, their own children, grandchildren, etc., etc., the more likely they are to be exposed to CMV and develop this natural immunity. And this is why this is such a tragic virus, an impact on newborn that very much is younger mothers who are at most risk. Hence the reason to vaccinate women at adolescent, because, as I say, unfortunately, accidental pregnancies do happen. But also, more importantly, it is younger mothers between, you know, 16, 18, and 30 that are at the greatest risk.
Thanks to my guest today, Jeff Baxter, President and CEO of VBI Vaccines, vbivaccines.com. Follow them on Twitter at VBI Vaccines. I'm Karen Jagoda, and you've been listening to the EmpoweredPatientPodcast.com show. Follow me on Twitter at Karen Jagoda. Like us on Facebook at Empowered Patient Radio. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.